Audible.
Sounds True presents.
This is Audible.
Sounds True presents Advanced Energy Anatomy, recorded in front of a studio audience with medical intuitive and the author of Anatomy of the Spirit, Dr. Carolyn Mace. And now, Session 1, The Principles of Co-Creation.
Advanced Energy Anatomy introduces the science of co-creation. Most important of all, I hope to highlight for you the significant power of choice that is the core gift of the human experience. For all the many gifts that the human being has, that we have as individuals, none is as powerful or as profound as our power of choice. And I would further say, none is as misunderstood, misrepresented, or eclipsed in its potency. It's my hope that this series, then, by introducing you to the principles of co-creation and highlighting for you the significant role you play in the co-creation of events through choice, and to help you learn how to mature choice within your life, that as a result, you will be able to create a much more satisfying life, and in the difficult times of your life, make choices that are guided by wisdom, faith, and the energy of your spirit. First, let me introduce to you the 7 principles of co-creation that I'll be working with in this series. The first law I want to introduce is that every thought creates form. For every choice, there is a consequence. This particular law has so much authority that for most of us, it's not one that we pay attention to, and yet, it may well be one of the most dominant forces guiding and directing every minute of your life. For every choice, there is a consequence. What I've discovered in my own work is how intricate and involved the choices are that we make in life. I think for most of us, choice is defined by what we say in terms of, I choose to go here, I choose to go there. We define it at a very pedestrian or very elementary level. The deeper creative choices we make in life are the ones we're not aware of. Those are the ones that have power. The choices of our attitudes, the choices of our belief systems, the choices of our resentments, the choices of the manner in which we love and the quality of love, all of these subtle choices that we really don't think about moment to moment, the thousands of choices we make in terms of why we judge someone, how we judge someone, how we choose to see someone. These are choices, every one of them, and everyone carries incredible potency. And when I do readings on people, I track their choices. And their body tells me the consequence. I track their choices, and their life tells me the consequence. The whole of your life has an anatomical system. It's duplicated in your physical anatomy system. And so when I talk about these laws of choice and consequence, you need to be aware that they're registered in your biography, and they're registered in your biology. The second law of creation is the law of magnetic attraction. Like attracts like. Magnetic attraction, simply put, is that the magnetics of your energy field, the magnetics of your spirit, the magnetics of your psyche, draw to you mirrored experiences. You attract to yourself what you need as a reflection of where you are at that point in your life, at that point in your spirit, and at that stage of your psychic development. And so this is the law that explains why when you have an idea, you attract to yourself people who can help you with that idea. The law of magnetic attraction is the one that operates behind support groups. Alcoholics Anonymous depends on the law of magnetic attraction. as do any health support groups. People are drawn there through some force field. Someone recommends, you know, I know this wonderful support group. That's not a coincidence. It's because your law of magnetic attraction is in motion. In the law of magnetic attraction, every part of us participates in this throbbing energy that draws to us all that we need to create. But here, it's worth pursuing this one point a little further. And that's creation is a process that includes that which is created by our fears as well as by our faith, by our mission in life, as well as what we are afraid to pursue in our mission in life. I'm highlighting that because the law of magnetic attraction also means that you attract to yourself what you're afraid of. You attract to yourself the elements in your life that unfold so that you can see your deepest fears. That law of magnetic attraction, it's engaged and it's in motion, and it will direct you, it will create circumstances using your own energy to connect you with people who can bring into your consciousness the parts of yourself you need to confront. And so what happens? Something like this, a dynamic I've seen countless times in my workshops. A person who has to come to terms with perhaps a very painful memory. I cannot tell you how many times they'll end up sitting next to someone in the workshop who has the exact same memory, the exact same scar tissue. Somehow, people who have suffered incest find each other within seconds at my workshops. Or people who are past the healing stage and are more interested in the creative stage, they're the ones who find themselves sitting at the same coffee table. I watch it now. I just watch it in motion. As people walk in thinking they are randomly walking into a room, only I know that the law of magnetic attraction is going to do the seating. And I watch it happen. And then I'll start asking questions because I'm enchanted with the way the universe has structured things. The universe has put these laws in motion to get us where we're supposed to go until we become conscious to make those choices for ourselves. The third law that I want to introduce is the relationship between time, space, and speed. This particular law is one that I began to observe in my work with people, particularly in the field of healing. When I noticed the difference between the speed at which people heal or the speed at which change occurs in people's lives. Why do certain things unfold faster in the lives of certain people, and for others, it takes more time? Why can some people impact the quality of health almost instantaneously, and for other people, no matter what they do, no matter how many techniques or healers they go to, the unfoldment of the health in their body takes time, long, long time. What's the difference? What's the different factor in their process of co-creation? I finally realized, and in my language, let me describe it this way, that there is a reason why spiritual traditions, all of them, emphasize the need to keep your spirit with you at all times. Another way to say it is keep your spirit in present time. Now, I want to give you an image to use as I describe this. I want you to imagine that you have energetic currents coming in through the top of your head, and that your role in life is to make investments with that energy through those currents. When I do a reading on you, I follow your investments. I see what you've invested your energy in. For every one of your investments, what you are actually doing is you're contributing a part of your life force to a thought, to a memory, to a person, to an ambition, to a trauma, to a situation. And you are wrapping your life force in the threads of that memory or in the threads of that relationship. And from that moment on, your precious life force, rather than serving you in the moment, is being directed because of this choice into your history. And therefore, it's keeping your history more alive and more vibrant than your present moment. Now, you don't realize this is a choice, but this is a choice to co-create. And what you are doing is you are co-creating your present via your history. You are using your history as your primary co-creative partner. And when you're attached to your history, it's only trauma or pain that creates that experience. The parts of your history that were wonderful, that made you feel good, that taught you, that brought you wisdom, you've already absorbed those. You are those. They are part of your present power and who you are. That's not historical. While you may well remember the wonderful experiences that made you who you are today, that memory does not cost you energy. That memory brings you energy. It pays what I call an energetic dividend. But keeping your past alive is like investing your life force into a mausoleum and hoping it pays you back in life chips, and that's not going to happen. Now, let's take this one step further. For every investment you have in keeping your past alive, you are creating time. You are investing yourself and creating the physical experience of physical linear time. Why is that? It goes like this. Because every investment you have in your past is an energy outside present time. In other words, you are involving more of your history in the creation of your present moment. So it takes more time to create your present moment. Let me give you a visual. Imagine that you were given an inspiration and heaven said to you, why don't you do this with your life, or why don't you do that? Or what if heaven said, it's time for you to meet the primary relationship of your life, your partner? Or what if you said, I need to heal this illness? Quite frankly, it doesn't matter what, but you have a request. What determines the speed at which that unfolds in your life? It's very simple. If you have a history that is not finished, then what you are in effect saying is, I will allow this next stage of my life to manifest. I will allow my healing to manifest. I will allow an opening in my life for a relationship. But it has to be timed at a rate that honors the pain of my past. The manifestation of this new stage of my life has to occur in a way that does not jostle all the unfinished business that I am holding on to. So, to be even more specific, it's time for you to heal a dynamic, heal a pain, heal a disease. And I would say to you, you know what it takes? First, you need more energy in present time. You're using energy medicine. You're using acupuncture. You're using therapeutic touch. But the problem is, you're holding on to so much past that you don't have enough energy in you to animate these energetic tools. Consequently, you're using aromatherapy is just perfume. Your use of crystals are just racks. You can't animate these because your energy is going into your past. So you say to me, well, how do I get my energy in present time? How do I co-create present time energy? This is where you make the wise choice. Let go of the past. Clip the strings. Forgive. Let go. Move on. A fundamental law of creation Give up the need to know why things happen as they do. Make no judgments and have no expectations. Live in the present moment and trust that what's being created in your life is being created for the best reasons and the best intentions. But if you're unable to do that, what you are in effect doing is you are choosing to allow your past to create your present. In which case, a guidance, a piece of inspiration, will take 5 years to manifest in your life because you don't want to let go of 5 years of your history. This is what determines what I call the difference between weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, and weight, W-A-I-T. The more emotional, psychic, painful weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, you have, the longer you have to W-A-I-T for anything to change in your life. The longer you have to wait for healing, the longer you have to wait for guidance, because what you are depending upon for stability in your life is your history rather than the spontaneous motion of moment-to-moment guidance. The spontaneous energy of creativity will be very threatening to you. And as a consequence, the co-creative choice and power you have will be directed to holding your world in place, to holding your history in place, rather than having the faith and the spontaneous energy to respond to the guidance that flows in your life at all times to create anew. When people live in this division of painful wait and the combustion of wondering why they're waiting for change, they can find the perception, the guidance, the pathway into understanding this polarity by taking a look at one thing. What am I holding on to from my past that is preventing me from creating a new present? All you need to do is look through that porthole. And what you'll recognize is that pain and trauma are elements in yourself that have profound voices of choice. They are choice points. Every painful memory is an element in you that is actively making a choice to create your body, to create your health, to create your yesterday, to create your present. I have done so many readings on people whose dilemma in life is a misunderstanding of the fundamental laws of creation and how they're integrating them and how they're working on them. When you choose to hold on to a weighted past, you have no idea that that is actually an illness. It's the illness of the mismanagement of creation. It's actually, in my opinion, an illness and qualifies for one that completely weights down your creativity, your emotions, your psychology, your psyche, your spirit, because it is unnatural to the spirit to be reduced in its creative power. That is not natural. And it is also not native to our spirit to be sent into a place that it doesn't recognize, which is past. Our spirits are not entities of past time. They are present beings. They don't resonate with the past. When we send our psyche to the past, our spirit remains in the present, and this is called the separation of forces. And the more you separate yourself, the less able you are to co-create a reality or co-create a life that you feel comfortable in, that you feel fully resonant with. This is how that break happens, when half of you is in the past or more. You know, I'll tell you something. We all have a way of being awestruck by people who seem to be able to create thought into form, to manifest rapidly the dynamics in their lives, to have an idea and boom, it manifests in present time. To heal. What makes a healer? The characteristic they all share, every one of them, is they live in present time. Is the majority of their energy is in present time. Another one of the laws of creation is that every thought and every emotion, every dynamic that goes on within you, you need to consider as a choice and an act of creation. There is no such thing as any activity of your mind or your heart that is not an act of creation. Every thought is a prayer. Every thought creates. Every emotion is a prayer. Every emotion creates. It's as simple as that. If I said to you, do you realize how many parts of you are creating simultaneously? If I said, go after all your fragments, figure out how many emotions you have, how much a part of yourself is in conflict, how much of you is in present time, how much of you wanders, how much of you has no idea what you're doing, how much of you is sad, how much of you is happy, how much of you is frightened. And now put all those parts together and you'd realize that you could be 20, 30, 40 people living in the same body. That's what I see when I do a reading. It's not exactly 20 or 30 people, but what I do see are multiple fragments of yourself moving in all different directions. Now, I want you to imagine that each one of these fragments is creating its own reality while simultaneously being part of this whole mothership, who you are. So when somebody says, I co-create my reality, I love to ask them, well, which part of you is working today? Because there's so much going on. And you think, well, potentially, let's just talk theory here for a moment. What is a realistic estimate of how much influence you could have in your reality? I mean, how much is realistic? Knowing full well that co, by its very definition, implies you've got a partner in the role of creation, which you do. The divine, your destiny, you're already locked into an active partnership. So let's talk about realistically, what can you do? What are you capable of? Exactly how should you define your own parameters? Well, I'm going to return here just for a second to include the balance and the relationship between weight as a density and weight in a sense of time, because the next step would be no time. Is it possible to be able to put your thought into form instantaneously? Well, let's take a look at something. Everybody ends up discovering synchronicity and coincidence. Everybody goes into this place of being enchanted by the unfolding of synchronicities and coincidences. And always, 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 I hear about the parking space one. And wouldn't you know it, there was a parking space waiting for me. It's a kind of a kindergarten example that once you just begin to take a look at your awareness, you'll see that thought into form incidences, itsy bitsy ones, like parking lot experiences, they really do start to happen. That's not your imagination. It's a carrot in front of your co-creative nose is what it is. But if you look at what's the mechanism behind it, you don't have any fear of its manifestation. Let's start there. You are embracing its manifestation. You want a parking space. That's part of what you want to recognize. You're not afraid of its manifestation. You want it. And it doesn't cost you anything. In other words, you don't have to go and therapeutically beat out your past to get that parking space. From an energetic point of view, you got enough capital on you to pay for that parking space. Larger acts of synchronicity are very expensive energetically because they require that you not be afraid of what you're creating and that you are not afraid of the consequences of what you are creating. You're not afraid of a parking space. You get a kick out of that. And then if you move it up to a little bigger level, you're not afraid of running into certain people and so there's coincidences, or what happens is you start becoming aware of, just as you think of someone, the phone rings. You get a kick out of that. That's not a big deal. But If you had an inspiration and you thought, you know, I just realized I don't belong in this relationship, or I just realized that this is a very difficult situation, I got to get out of this job. That may not be a realization that you want to co-create real fast. You may want to take your time realizing or creating that situation or responding to it. This is where you want to put the brakes on synchronicity and coincidence. You don't want anything synchronistic to happen. You don't want a coincidence. There are so many stories that I've heard of people who've come to the awakening that they're not with the right person in their lives. They're not with the right partner. That's an intimidating awakening. What that means is you have to dismantle a whole part of your life, like all of it. And that's not a realization a lot of people welcome. It's one they dance around. It's one they play with. It's one they visit. But they don't necessarily want the full potency of that realization to become absorbed into the whole of their spirit. Because when that happens, you have to start what? Co-creating. It's a juice. And so what people do is they slow it down. They don't want it to happen instantaneously. And when you slow something down, synchronicity, by its very nature, is instantaneous. So you reduce the energy of synchronicity by the fear of responding to your guidance. Now, this is how co-creation, you are co-creating. You're determining time. You are co-creating. I've asked so many of my audiences, how many times have you ended up in a situation like you get the intuitive gut feeling, I got to leave this job? Everybody knows what that's like. Everyone listening to this knows what a feeling like that is. And I'll say, did you respond to it right away? Did you choose to respond to it right away? Well, no. Well, what did you choose? I chose to repress it. I didn't want to. I chose to maybe work my way through it. I chose to distract myself. But you didn't choose to respond to it. Now, that's high-tech guidance, spiritually speaking. And when you get that type of guidance that says, get out of here, you don't belong here, if you were to respond to that right in the moment, it's because something is waiting for you. The gods don't give you a signal and then just leave you nowhere. When you start getting the intuition to make different choices, to start co-creating the next stage of your life, it's because the time's right. So when you start to make your choices, to repress the signals to co-create, this is what happens. Throughout this series, I am going to be speaking angel with you. So this is my first introduction to speaking angel. So I want you to imagine that your angel is sitting next to you. And your angel gives you a hit in your intuitive system and says, come on, get up. It's time for you to move. I got your schedule here. I'm your guardian. I know where you're supposed to be and when. And you got to get out now. Come on, let's go. And you get this feeling. You're responding now because the science of co-creation by its nature, the promise from the other side, the divine side, is you will get signals. You'll get intuitive instructions. This is part of the science. You aren't left to wander the earth with random choices. Choice is so powerful that you are given instructions always before you make a choice as to what a wise choice would look like, what it would feel like. Always, always, always. If you are still and you're attuned, you'll always get the instruction. You'll say to me, but I don't know what to choose. Yes, you do. The moment you say you don't know is the moment you do know. What you're saying to me is, I don't like the guidance I'm getting. Therefore, I don't know what to choose. There's no such thing as not knowing. Truly, there is not. There's not wanting to know. But if you don't want to know, it's because you do know. As verbiage as that might sound. So this is what your angel does. Your angel says to you, look, I'm going to give you 2, 3, maybe 4 warnings to make this choice. And after that, I'm taking over. This is co-creation. So you go to work and it doesn't feel the same. The magnetics of the office are different. The magnetics of the relationships you have in the office are different. You're not reading it yet. You're not reading it well. You're going to read it well by the end of this series. But in the beginning, I'm telling you what that energetic pattern is that you're going to feel when you're in the midst of the beginning of a cycle of co-creation, when you are about to be put within the winds of choice. So you are feeling it, you're sensing it. What happens is you start sensing it as an upset. You will always sense dynamics as an upset. And then you move on. And then finally your angel will say, if you're not going to do this, I'm doing it for you. And you'll get fired. The co-creative act of getting fired. And you'll feel like your life is out of control. What you've done is just abdicated control. It's not out of control. You've abdicated control. And this is what it feels like. Now, these are unbelievable acts of co-creation. The whole point of this journey of becoming conscious, the whole point of it, is that you take charge of the phenomenal power of what your spirit can create in physical form. The more you become aware of it, the faster your life changes. So continuing, the next law of co-creation is a configuration, a trio that I always put together. And that's make no judgments, have no expectations, and give up the need to know why things happen as they do. Again, this little trio emerged out of the observations I've made through hundreds and thousands of readings. Having expectations in life stops the flow of your creative energy because you lock your energy into a specific goal. You decide, I need to create that. And you lock your energy in and it becomes locked in like steel. And because of that, all of the choices you make from that moment on are only to support or influence the one target you want to create. And because you're so locked into it, you become deaf to guidance. You can't hear it, you can't feel it, you can't sense guidance, because all you want is guidance that helps you create the one target you've decided should be created in your life. That creates blockages in your biology, in your psyche, in your soul, because that's not the way creation should happen. Remember, co-creation is a partnership. You make a choice, and you have to always allow for the fact that for every choice, heaven meets you halfway. Choice is a six of one, half a dozen of the other proposition. Have no expectations. This one is a challenge. They're all challenges, but this one is a major challenge because here you are involving the nature of your ego. The positive side of your ego is determination, honor, integrity, your sense of self, self-esteem. The challenging part of your ego is stubbornness, pride, and somewhere in between most of us live. When you have expectations, what happens is you want to put your imprint on something. Your pride gets involved. And it's very, very difficult to get out of the way and to allow something you're creating to unfold in its own way, to unfold in a way that might be perfect for that project, but from your point of view, looks like disaster. Now, every one of us has had experiences in our lives where in the moment of something happening, it feels like the worst thing in the world. And yet, 1 week, 2 weeks, a year, 4 years down the road, you're going to turn around and say, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. I couldn't be happier. It was the proverbial blessing in disguise. Having expectations, wanting things to work out the way you want them to work out, making judgments, that locks in pain. That's all it is pain, because you are interfering with a process that may in fact be the beginning of one of the most wonderful experiences of your life. This is where you get into the paradoxical nature of God. And that's that the divine speaks in paradox, manifests in paradox. It is the nature of divinity What looks big is small. What looks frightening, quite frankly, is safe. What looks safe will be frightening. Everything is upside down. The gods work in upside down. And life is a journey of getting turned upside down so that your inner world becomes more prominent than your outer world, so that you work in the world from behind your eye instead of the world in front of your eye. So you start with energy and enter into matter and not let matter enter into your energy. Life is the journey of becoming reversed. And in this process, if you think about that, and think about dynamics that begin to happen to you in life, and you think, this looks like it's going to be the greatest failure. Actually, that should be your signal that something successful is unfolding here. I am choosing not to interfere with this. I'll do the best I can and let go of the consequences, and I will give up the need to know why things are happening as they are. The third part of this trio, give up the need to know why things happen as they do. Now, this particular little demand to know why things happen as they do is without a doubt one of the most painful demands of the human experience. I've seen more people develop serious illnesses because they will not allow their lives to continue. They won't allow their heart to heal. They won't allow their pride to heal. They don't get out of their childhood. They don't move forward. Because they must know why things happened as they did within their childhood, within their parental relationships, within their romantic relationships, with why their children feel about them as they do. The locking in to know, I want to know why things happen as they did, otherwise I'm not moving forward. It is the most toxic thing to your creativity, to who you could be today, to the full potential of you as a human being, as a spirit, to the full voltage of your life. It is the reason you will not let go of your history. Why was I hurt? Why did this happen? Why isn't Donna Reed my mother? I'm telling you, this one thing can bring down the whole of your life. If any part of you muses around, I wonder why things happen as they do. Why? Poor me. It's the circuit into self-pity. And if you are plugged into that circuit, I would ask you as you listen to this series, you hang on to that circuit of self-pity. And I'll direct you into recognizing what that's creating for you and how toxic that one circuit is in your life. So continuing, the next law of co-creation is accountability. Here is where you make a natural progression from being accountable in your process of creation within a group, the we creativity, the we choice, to the I choice. Moving from creating within a group structure to creating within the self structure. Here again, I want to talk about time and the speed of creation. When you are in a group thought form or creating with a group, it takes more time. It's as simple as that. It takes more time to ask a group of people what color a room should be than if I just asked you directly. So think about that. The more connected you are to group creative processes, the longer it takes for you to co-create with your own intuitive system a change in your life. And I'm going to apply that just for a second again to the co-creative act of healing. And let me say that if your energy is connected to thought forms that are held dominantly by our group society, such as illness runs in the family and cancer takes a long time to heal, those collective thoughts have more creative force in your individual body than you do. And I use that just to give you a framework, because as we work together in this series, I am hoping to introduce you to an ability to discern where your spirit is and how much of you is creating in the company of strangers rather than taking charge of the co-creation of your life as an individual. Accountability, then, is a determining feature as to where you are in the spectrum. Remember, accountability is the signature of the self. Blame is the signature of the group. I'm not responsible. I was raised that way. We always do it this way. Well, this is typical of people in the South. This is typical of people in the North. There comes a point, as I say to so many people in my workshops, where you have to add on a little appendage to that sentence, which is, well, I can't help it. I grew up that way. But quite frankly, now that I'm a conscious adult, I am choosing to remain prejudiced in this regard. Because we run and hide behind group choices. They are a total way of abdicating the personal use of your creative power. And it is also to me a very deep revelation of how much your spirit and your psyche and your conscience automatically knows how powerful you are. And that when we engage in negative acts, we run for cover because accountability is so strong that we want to move our spirit out of it rather than hold ourselves accountable. And that the spiritual journey in life is one of accountability. Accountability for the force of that which we create and the consequences of that which we create in life. The seventh law of co-creation is that creation moves in a cycle. And this is good news, because here are the archetypes, the symbolic patterns we can all relate to. The archetype of death and rebirth, death and new beginnings, what goes around comes around. Life moves in a cycle. Winter, spring, summer, fall, we move in a cycle. The beautiful parts of that, and there's a great comfort in that truth, is that you will continually get beautiful opportunities to make your choices again and again and again in life. There is no such thing as the thought form, I've let my choices and chances pass me by. I should have made the choice then. I would be so much better now. I have to tell you that that's an illusion. That is a complete and full and total illusion. Because from a spiritual point of view, there's no such thing as time. From a mission point of view, there's no such thing as running out of the options you were born to experience in your life. There's no such thing. What does happen, perhaps, is that the circumstances or the package your options come in might be different. But always and again, the opportunities to choose to explore the full range of your spirit will come back to you again and again. You will never run out of choices or options, and you will never, quote, blow your chances in life. That simply is against the natural laws of co-creation. Now that I've finished introducing you to the seven laws of co-creation, the next natural question is, how do these laws apply to the body of your life? When we look at all the chakras together and how all of our chakras work together, you need to think about those seven chakras as your creative allies, as your creative team, that each of those energy fields is interacting with you with every single choice you make. We think that we make choices mentally and that we deal with them emotionally. So the mind makes the choice, the heart picks up the pieces, or the heart enjoys what the mind has chosen for it. But the truth is, every choice you make has seven faces. And every part of you that's creating has seven different power zones that are interacting in everything you do at all times. Each of your chakras resonates to a different level of your life and to a different quality of power within your psyche, within your emotions, and within your spirit. Let me walk you through the seven chakras with the intention of describing to you how co-creation works through each of the energy centers of your body. Your first chakra, which connects you to the grounded nature of your life, to physical life, to the earth force, to the nature force. Here, the laws of co-creation impact you in terms of your relationship with the creative force of nature itself. People who have a very strong first chakra connection, for example, to the grounded energy of Mother Nature, they really do make superb gardeners. They really do resonate very strongly with Mother Nature. And I'll tell you, when somebody doesn't have that kind of depth connection in the first chakra, it's very difficult for them to rely upon the natural co-creative energies in the physical world as allies. They need a lot of help. And I'll tell you one other thing I think is very funny. People who have a weak first chakra, when it comes to co-creation, have the worst trouble with reading a map and with keeping directions. They get very magnetically disoriented because they're not connected to the natural magnetics of the global system. And they make lousy sailors. They can't seem to read nature's signals. And when I'm with somebody who has that anchor sense of creation in the first chakra, you can rely on this person to have the instincts like a bird, like an arrow. This person can find his or her way out of any physical situation because they're so connected to what I would now call the intuitive knowledge of Mother Earth. Your second chakra connects you to the energies of survival dynamics, survival tools, sexuality, money, relationships, earth power. You're connected in this way and through this part of your body. Let me give you an example, just a small example, so that you can relate to this a little bit. Like attracts like. How would that apply here to your second chakra? This is the place of relationship. This is how you attract someone that you would like to be in partnership with, for example. The law of magnetic attraction resonates to this part of your body, which explains, for example, high sexual chemistry. That's the law of magnetic attraction working. It literally activates your sexuality and your passion. Sometimes so intensely that it eclipses your reason. That's how strong magnetic attraction can be in your second chakra. So you get a sense for how the force of a law maneuvers and feels in a chakra center in your body. Your third chakra naturally relates to your self-esteem. It relates to your center of personal power, your ego. This is the part of your body where you can sense where your creative forces are in operation outside of yourself, whether you're giving your creative power to another person and why. This is the part of your body that you can track and follow how you're using co-creation or who's creating your reality for you. You can sense that right here. Your fourth chakra is your center of emotions, your center of love, your center of jealousy, envy, all your powerful emotions, all your deep emotions, your emotional wounds. Here they reside in your fourth chakra. Here, of course, the laws of co-creation have a great deal to do with your motivation, with your private agendas. This particular chakra needs a lot of excavating for people because it's very difficult to finally get to the core of your motivations emotionally, of the depth of your wounds, of what part of your choices are being influenced by the emotional experiences of your life. And here, in your fourth chakra, is all of that data. In your fifth, this is the natural chakra that is in the midst of everything we're going to talk about, which is the power of choice. Your fifth chakra is your willpower. And as you look at the laws of co-creation, it is a study, an investigation of why you make the choices you do, what your motivations are, and how strongly you do determine the force with which you create your own reality? Do you abdicate your will or your choice over to other people? This is the chakra in your body through which you are going to study that process. Your sixth chakra is your intelligence zone, your reality zone, your mind, your intellect. This is the area of your body through which you study exactly how you structure reality. Who's in charge of your life? What choices are you afraid of making? Why do you block choices? What are you afraid of in terms of the potential that you have? Your reasons behind making the choices that you do. And finally, your seventh chakra, which is what I call your grace bank account. It's that part of your energy that resonates most closely to your relationship to God, to prayer, to guidance, to your angels. This part of your energy field holds your attitudes about God, your fear and trepidation of having an intimate relationship with a force you cannot help but be drawn to. The patterns you have that are conflictual about God, that are comfortable with God, these resonate in your seventh chakra. And it's crucial for you to become aware of these patterns, not only in the seventh, but throughout all of the rest of your energy centers, because the combination of all of these form the foundation upon which you develop an understanding and an awareness of the role you play in the co-creation of the quality of your life. Now let's take a look for a minute at your eighth chakra. Your eighth chakra is transcendent of your personal energy field. I consider it a universal energetic center that connects you to your personal archetypal patterns. An archetype is a universal pattern of energy, an image that everyone recognizes just in the communication of one term. For example, if I said to you, that individual is just a natural warrior, or if I said, that man's a knight, an absolute knight in shining armor, if I said to you, that woman considers herself a princess, I really wouldn't have to say anything else. The whole message that I'm communicating would travel completely into your psyche on the weight of that one word. Similarly, there are four archetypes that I call the archetypes of survival. Your prostitute, saboteur, victim, and child. Each of these four archetypes projects a subtle influence into our decision-making process in our lives, not to control us, but to stir our unconscious fears and our unconscious hesitations about our own development in life, and their role is to bring them into our conscious mind. Now, the combination of all of these chakras, the whole route from archetype to inspiration, through consciousness into choice, and then into the physical world, this is the signature, the road of creation. It happens through the natural process of the chakras. One of the amazing characteristics of the chakra system is that it does flow according to the dynamics of creation. The breath of creation literally flows through the chakras, hits physical matter, reverses, and returns energy to matter. The cycle of creation moves right through you. Let me describe how it works from energy to matter. And we're going to begin with the eighth chakra, which is place where your script in life is contained. And it flows into your being, incarnates into your being, droplet by droplet, from this impersonal direction of God, slowly into your personal mind, and then it moves into inspiring choices, and then it moves into activating how you feel, and then it heads for the physical ground. Let me give it to you now, chakra by chakra. From the eighth chakra, an archetypal pattern, when it becomes activated, forms an inspiration. When an inspiration descends, this moves naturally into your seventh chakra. You begin to pick up an inspiration. Then it naturally descends into your sixth chakra. Here you'll feel an impulse to articulate, to give words, to give thoughts, to turn an inspiration into a physical reality. You do that in your sixth chakra. Once you can word it, once you can language it, it'll descend naturally. I want you to think of something. As you're doing this, you are literally giving weight, density, time, space. You are breathing life, your prana, your life force, into a concept. To use another analogy, you're back in the book of Genesis and in the Garden of Eden, and you're taking your life force and you're breathing it into earth, and this is the chemistry of creation. So now we're into the fifth chakra, and the density of this thought form descends into a level in your life where you have to choose. What are you going to do with it? Now that you have this perception, are you going to accept it? Are you going to create it? What are you going to do with it? This is the place where will and agreement meets energy. At this point, if you start articulating it and accepting it, the descent continues. And then it flows into your heart, the major league crossroads. At this point, your soul steps in full force and says, are you willing to put your heart into it? Because if you put your heart into it, this is going to happen. Oftentimes, this is where you kind of have to take a pause because this is the major crossroads. But an idea in its way down the corridor of manifestation hits the heart. And if the heart says, I'm in, it descends to the next level, which is your third chakra. This is where creation becomes very personal. At this point, you're going to take this idea, and you're automatically, it is just inherent in the process. This idea and you will have a discussion about how that idea can affect you as a person. Will you feel foolish? What impact? Will you feel proud? Does it enhance your self-esteem? Does it take courage? This is where that idea in you will have a practical, you're going to get real practical now about the impact creation's going to have in your life. See, in the higher altitude, your seventh, sixth, fifth, fourth chakras, they aren't practical. They can do whatever they want because they don't pay any bills. Because they don't affect your life. You can think anything you want in the world behind your chakra eyes. And nobody knows about it. But now you're getting practical. Remember, that's a key word now in our work together in this series. Is how do you practically work with creation and the energy of creation? Well, when it gets to your ego, when you find yourself asking questions like, I don't know, are people going to laugh at me? I don't know if I can do this. From now on, you connect the dot that idea is sitting in your belly. That's where it is. It's not in your heart anymore. It's not in your head anymore. It's made it to your belly. And if you decide, I'm going to do it anyway, the idea descends to your second chakra. You're going to know it's there because you're going to start asking yourself questions like this. Let's get practical. What's this going to cost me? How am I going to do this? What about the relationship? Will it help a relationship? This is where you actually get practical. But you see, at this level, in the second chakra, it still hasn't bottomed into the ground. This is still negotiating because you can say at this point, I'm sorry, I'm not investing. You can still back out at the second chakra. And if you look, the second chakra is abortion. It's birth, it's abortion, it's creation. So you have those three forces coming together there. You can still choose, I'm getting out. But when it hits the ground, if you decide, no, I'm putting my money in it, or I'm putting my heart in it, or I'm putting my energy in it, you can count on it. It descends, and it hits the physical earth. At this point, your idea is going to take off in all directions, and it will no longer be yours in your womb. Womb here being a gender-free word. It will no longer be yours. It won't be in the captivity of your energy field. Once it hits the ground, it's going to take off into the multi-energetic directions of life. In other words, choice meets consequence. And this is how it works. Now, consequence pays dividends. It's going to come to call. So every day as you're breathing, you are breathing in consequence. You breathe in consequence, you breathe out creation. Breathe in consequence, breathe out creation. Remember that. So when you breathe in, you're collecting consequence. And first it starts with the first chakra, the consequences of your physical life. Consequence meets creation. First chakra, up you go. The consequence hits the second chakra. Did this cost you or you're earning money? The next chakra, do you feel good about what you created or do you feel disempowered? You're going to deal with the same questions in reverse in the process of consequenting versus creating. Now it hits your fourth chakra. Did it enhance your sense of love? Did it hurt you? Did you wound somebody? You're going to deal with the consequences of what you created. Now it ascends to the fifth. Now here's a biggie, because the fifth one's going to say, what are you going to do with this experience? Exactly. You're going to store it in your cell tissue, or are you going to use it to enhance your wisdom? What do you want to do with it? For a lot of people, they take their consequences at this point, and they put them in suspended animation, because they don't know what to do with them. They could let them go. They know better, because this question is transcendent of the heart. You've already been through the heart. So while the heart might hurt, still, the question of, so what are you going to do now, hurt or not hurt, implies by the natural lineup of creation that you know better than to hold on to a wound. Nevertheless, you have the choice. And your higher self, your angel, says, well, what are you going to do? It's in your fifth chakra. Make a choice. If it's been a negative experience for you, you may at that point decide, nope, I'm going to hold on to the pain because that's what serves me right now. Or you can decide, this was a learning experience. I'm going to let go of the package it came in and absorb the learning. And then what if it was the most wonderful experience in the whole wide world? What if you just absolutely adored what your choice created? Here, it enhances your center and sense of choice. Still, you face a challenge. Challenge being, so how much authority are you going to take for it? Remember, it's co-creation. Are you going to decide you did it all yourself? Or are you going to remember you were inspired by this? What are you going to do here? Every step of the way, co-creation is a two-way street. So what if you decided, nope, this is all mine. It's all mine. I did it all by myself. Now you get to your sixth chakra. Here, when you decide to say, well, I think that I'll continue to create. It's all my doing. It's all my idea. And you forget that there's a co-end of that. That seventh chakra, that high voltage inspiration, is not going to be as clear. Not as a punishment, because at this altitude, there's no such thing. But as a consequence, as an effect, without an awareness that your other partner in life is God, you can't go forward. And what if you were to say, however, at that fifth chakra, sixth chakra, I adored what I created. Thank you, heaven, for letting me participate in this, and I'm open to the next experience. And that energy keeps flowing. What happens when you can approach it that way is your spirit, your psyche, your being keeps opening up slowly, gradually, continually, as you get to know more the intimate nature of God. And then we return to the eighth chakra, where you understand yourself symbolically in that impersonal distance that gives you a greater and greater view about why things happen as they do in your life. So let me take you just a little bit deeper into the world of archetypes, because in this series, they play a vital role in everything that I'm going to teach you, whether we're dealing with relationships or finances, career, spirituality. We're going to meet the archetypes at every turn in the bend, because in order to understand the full power of creation and your role in creation, or better to say, to understand just a little bit about the power of creation, you need to get a perspective on where inspiration begins and on where you begin. And that's at the level of spiritual patterning of the divine intellect, transcendent of the personal physical world. So we'll spend a lot of time in that eighth chakra. And from there, as we investigate the role of co-creative choices in all of the other areas of life, you'll always have a reference point that you can refer to that's quite comfortable when you learn to see yourself and work with yourself in a distant but intimate level of a relationship with God and your power to bring choice and consequence, thought to form into your life with guidance, wisdom, and hopefully a full heart.
This concludes Session 1. Advanced Energy Anatomy continues with Session 2.